John, thanks so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's a total pleasure.
Now, Paul McCartney's handwritten lyrics for Hey Jude recently sold at auction for £731,000 in the UK. There's also around 725 editions of the Beatles' Sgt. Pepper's album. What does this tell us about their long-lasting cultural heritage?
Well, I mean, those two examples particularly I don't know. They're different from each other. The selling of the handwritten lyrics maybe has more to do with the fetishization of, you know, holy artifacts of famous artists, and you know, the depthless pockets of some, you know, older people in the population. you know, the many, many editions of something like Sgt. Pepper's, yes, it's a record that it seems people will keep listening to for as long as we can imagine people listening to music.
Absolutely. Yeah. What was so different about the look and the sound of the Beatles?
Well, when they started, they were around for a few years before they got signed to EMI in 1962. But something that was really unusual about them at the time was that they insisted on being accepted and marketed as a group of four people. And just in the last couple of years, I read Mark Lewisohn's amazing book, Tune In, and I didn't really know, but at that time, nearly every group was an individual's name. And so, like Cliff Richards and the Shadows, Dion and the Belmonts.
Mm.
So the idea of a band just being called the Beatles was, I mean, it seems like the most natural thing in the world to us, but in 1962, it was radical. George Martin, their producer, spent quite a bit of energy trying to figure out if they should be called John Lennon and the Beatles or McCartney and the Beatles. But they said no. They were strong enough. I don't know. You know, there's several layers of serendipity to how they actually got their records released. But yeah, they stuck to their guns and said, no, actually, we're the Beatles. We're a collective. There's four of us. So that was something, to begin with.
Absolutely.
I guess another thing is that the mixture of styles that they performed it wasn't that unusual for groups at the time to mix, you know, old standards with rock and roll covers, perhaps. But what was unusual was for a band to insist on writing their own material.
Mm.
And, I mean, they weren't the only group to be doing that. I mean, there were people like Buddy Holly and Roy Orbison. The Everly Brothers wrote some of their own material. So it wasn't like they were absolutely the first, but they were very bold in insisting that their own material was their what they focused on and what their singles were, and also that, of course, the songs they were writing were of such high quality.
How has the music affected the generations and the music that has come after they split up that we even hear on our radios today?
Well, you know, people have written books about that. I think there's a couple of things I'd say there. Well, one is that they did set a kind of template for the rock band, and a particular template where there was more than one singer.
Mm.
So you might say that a group like Fleetwood Mac, which has a blend of voices and a couple of different songwriting personalities that are distinct from each other and yet, you know, very much contribute to a group identity and aesthetic, maybe that's something that the Beatles very much helped to establish. But the other thing I'd say, the other part of your question, I actually kind of wonder if the sort of supremacy of the Beatles as the greatest band ever or the greatest pop artist ever, I mean, I can think of lots of arguments to support that idea, but I do kind of think that for younger demographics now, they're more just part of a pantheon of great pop artists. So I don't know really if any more they're more significant than, say, in, you know, for an audience of, say, 30 people who are 30 and under. I get the impression that Fleetwood Mac, David Bowie, Pink Floyd, yeah. Michael Jackson, Madonna, ABBA, all those groups are kind of like the really, really big, important, influential groups. And I don't know if I would still say that the Beatles are the most influential. I mean, they certainly were for decades and decades. But I think that the pantheon is kind of leveling out a little bit now.
Absolutely. Their legacy will never be forgotten or lost or its significance downplayed, but it maybe is not as relevant in today's music scene.
Well, I think the thing is that so much, you know, you look at something like the Beatles as a rock band, and of course they took rock music to a lot of really interesting and at times experimental places, but you know, hip-hop's been around since the mid-70s.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you look at the music that's on the charts these days, rock and roll, you know, rock, anything you call rock music is kind of, it's a niche interest. You know, the reason why an artist like Courtney Barnett stood out so much, well, one of the reasons, aside from the fact that she's brilliant, writes great songs, is that she was presenting a three-piece rock band.
Mm.
And in a sea of music indebted to soul and hip-hop and electronic music, that's kind of a novelty now. So while the Beatles remain extremely influential, the amount of popular music that people are listening to now that is rock as opposed to something that's based on electronic music or hip-hop is relatively niche.
Mm. Unfortunately, John, we'll have to leave it there, but thank you so much for your time this evening. Really appreciate it.
No worries. Thanks for the chat.